Star Wars, Heir to the Empire by Timothy Zahn, continued. Cassette number 8, side 1. What I do find compelling is that they're our guests. They've sat at our table and eaten our food. And, like it or not, that means they're under our protection. Mara's lip twitched.
And do these rules of hospitality apply to Skywalker, too?
She asked sardonically. You know they don't, he said. But now is not the time or the place to turn him over to the Empire, even if that's the way the decision ultimately goes. Do you understand?
No, she growled. I don't.
Carda eyed her, strongly tempted to tell her that she didn't need to understand, only to obey. It's a matter of relative strength, he told her instead. Here on the ground, with an Imperial Star Destroyer orbiting overhead, we have no bargaining position at all. I wouldn't do business under such circumstances, even if Thrawn was the most trustworthy client in the galaxy, which he's not. Now do you understand? She took a deep breath, let it out.
I don't agree, she gritted, but I'll accept your decision.
Thank you. Perhaps after the Imperials leave, you can ask General Calrissian about the perils of making bargains while stormtroopers are strolling around your territory. Carda looked back at the display. So, Falcon moved, Solo and Calrissian moved. Skywalker and the droid should be all right where they are. The foreshed has enough shielding to keep out anything but a fairly determined probe.
And if Thrawn is determined?
Then we may have trouble, Carda agreed calmly. On the other hand, I doubt that Thrawn would be coming down himself if he thought there was a possibility of a firefight. The upper military ranks don't achieve that status by risking their own lives unnecessarily. He nodded at the door. Enough talk. You have your job, I have mine. Let's get to them. She nodded and turned to the door. And as she did so, a sudden thought struck him. Where did you put Skywalker's lightsaber? He asked.
It's in my room, she said, turning back. Why?
Better get it and put it somewhere else. Lightsabers aren't supposed to be highly detectable, but there's no point in taking chances. Put it in with the resonator cavities in 3-shed. They ought to provide adequate shielding from stray sensor probes.
Right.
She regarded him thoughtfully.
What was all that business about capital starships?
You heard everything that was said.
I know. I was talking about your reaction to it.
He grimaced to himself. I'd hoped it wasn't that obvious.
It wasn't.
She waited expectantly. He pursed his lips. Ask me again later. Right now, we have work to do. For another second, she studied him. Then, without a word, she nodded and left. Taking a deep breath, Carda got to his feet. First thing to do would be to get back to the dining room and inform his guests of the sudden change in plans. And after that, to prepare himself for a face-to-face confrontation with the most dangerous man in the Empire. With Skywalker and spare warships as two of the topics of conversation. It was going to be a most interesting afternoon. Okay, R2, Luke called as he made the last of the connections. I think we're ready to try it. Cross your fingers. From the next room came a complicated series of electronic jabbers. Probably, Luke decided, the droid reminding him that he didn't have any fingers to cross. Fingers. For a moment, Luke looked down at his right hand, flexing his fingers and feeling the unpleasant pins and needles tingling numbness there. It had been 5 years since he'd really thought of the hand as being a machine attached to his arm. Now, suddenly, it was impossible to think of it as anything but that. R2 beeped impatiently. Right, Luke agreed, forcing his attention away from his hand as best he could, and moving the end of the wire toward what he hoped was the proper contact point. It could have been worse, he realized. The hand could have been designed with only a single power supply, in which case he wouldn't have even this much use of it. Here goes, he said, and touched the wire. And with no fuss or dramatics whatsoever, the door slid quietly open. Got it, Luke hissed. Carefully, trying not to lose the contact point, he leaned over and peered outside. The sun was starting to sink behind the trees, throwing long shadows across the compound. From his position, Luke could see only a little of the grounds, but what he could see seemed to be deserted. Setting his feet, he let go of the wire and dived for the doorway. With the contact broken, the door slid shut again, nearly catching his left ankle as he hit the ground and rolled awkwardly into a crouch. He froze, waiting to see if the noise would spark any reaction. But the silence continued, and after a few seconds, he got to his feet and ran to the shed's other door. R2 had been right. There was indeed no lock on this half of the shed. Luke hit the release, threw one last glance around, and slipped inside. The droid beeped an enthusiastic greeting, bobbing back and forth awkwardly in the restraint collar, a torus-shaped device that fits snugly around his legs and wheels. Quiet, R2, Luke warned the other, kneeling down to examine the collar. And hold still. He'd been worried that the collar would be locked or intertwined into R2's wheel system in some way, requiring special tools to disengage. But the device was much simpler than that. It merely held enough of the droid's weight off the floor so that he couldn't get any real traction. Luke released a pair of clasps and pushed the hinged halves apart, and R2 was free. Come on, he told the droid, and headed back to the door. As far as he could see, the compound was still deserted. The ship's around that way, he whispered, pointing toward the central building. Looks like the best approach would be to circle to the left, keeping inside the trees as much as we can. Can you handle the terrain? R2 raised his scanner, beeped a cautious affirmative. Okay. Keep an eye out for anyone coming out of the buildings. They'd made it into the woods and were perhaps a quarter of the way around the circle when R2 gave a warning chirp. Freeze, Luke whispered, stopping dead beside a large tree trunk and hoping they were enough in the shadows. His own black outfit should blend adequately into the darkening forest background, but R2's white and blue were another matter entirely. Fortunately, the three men who came out of the central building never looked in their direction, but headed straight toward the edge of the forest. Headed there at a fast, determined trot. And just before they disappeared into the trees, all three drew their blasters. R2 moaned softly. I don't like it either, Luke told him. Let's hope it doesn't have anything to do with us. All clear? The droid beeped affirmation, and they started off again. Luke kept half an eye on the forest behind them, remembering Mara's veiled hints about large predators. It could have been a lie, of course, designed to discourage him from trying to escape. For that matter, he'd never spotted any real evidence that the window of his previous room had had an alarm on it. R2 beeped again. Luke twisted his attention back to the compound and froze. Mara had stepped out of the central building. For what seemed like a long time, she just stood there on the doorstep, looking distractedly up into the sky. Luke watched her, not daring even to look down to see how well concealed R2 might be. If she turned in their direction, or if she went to the shed to see how he was doing... Abruptly, she looked down again, a determined expression on her face. She turned toward the second barracks building and headed off at a brisk walk. Luke let out a breath he hadn't realized he'd been holding. They were far from being out of danger. All Mara had to do was turn her head 90 degrees to her left, and she'd be looking directly at them. But something about her posture seemed to indicate that her attention and thoughts were turned inward, as if she'd suddenly made a hard decision. She went into the barracks, and Luke made a quick decision of his own. "Come on, R2," he murmured. "It's getting too crowded out here. We're going to cut farther into the forest, come up on the ships from behind." It was, fortunately, a short distance to the maintenance hangar and the group of ships parked alongside it. They arrived after only a few minutes to discover their X-Wing gone. "No, I don't know where they've moved it to," Luke gritted, looking around as best he could while still staying undercover. "Can your sensors pick it up?" R2 beeped a negative, adding a chirping explanation Luke couldn't even begin to follow. "Well, it doesn't matter," he reassured the droid. "We'd have had to put down somewhere else on the planet and find something with a working hyperdrive anyway. We'll just skip that step and take one of these." He glanced around, hoping to find a Z-95 or Y-wing, or something else he was at least marginally familiar with. But the only ships he recognized were a Corellian corvette and what looked like a downsized bulk freighter. "Got any suggestions?" he asked R2. The droid beeped a prompt affirmative, his little sensor dish settling on a pair of long, lean ships about twice the length of Luke's X-Wing. Fighters, obviously, but not like anything the Alliance had ever used. "One of those?" he asked doubtfully. R2 beeped again, a distinct note of impatience to the sound. "Right. We're a little pressed for time," Luke agreed. They made it across to one of the fighters without incident. Unlike the X-Wing design, the entrance was a hinged hatchway door in the side. Possibly one reason R2 had chosen it, Luke decided, as he manhandled the droid inside. The pilot's cockpit wasn't much roomier than an X-Wing's, but directly behind it was a three-seat tech weapons area. The seats weren't designed for astromech droids, of course, but with a little ingenuity on Luke's part and some stretch on the restraints, he managed to get R2 wedged between two of the seats and firmly strapped in place. "Looks like everything's already on standby," he commented, glancing at the flickering lights on the control boards. "There's an outlet right there. Give everything a quick check while I strap in. With a little luck, maybe we can be out of here before anyone even knows we're gone." She had delivered the open comlink message to Chin, and the quieter ones to Avis and the others at the Millennium Falcon. And as she stalked her way, glowering across the compound toward the number 3 shed, Mara decided once more that she hated the universe. She had been the one who'd found Skywalker. She, by herself alone. There was no question about that. No argument even possible. It should be she, not Carda, who had the final say on his fate. "I should have left him out there," she told herself bitterly as she stomped across the beaten ground. "Should have just let him die in the cold of space." She'd considered that, too, at the time. But if he'd died out there, all alone, she might never have known for sure that he was, in fact, dead. And she certainly wouldn't have had the satisfaction of killing him herself. She looked down at the lightsaber clenched in her hand, watching the afternoon sunlight glint from the silvery metal as she hefted its weight. She could do it now, she knew. Could go in there to check on him and claim he had tried to jump her. Without the force to call on, he would be an easy target, even for someone like her, who hadn't picked up a lightsaber more than a handful of times in her life. It would be easy, clean, and very fast. And she didn't owe Carda anything, no matter how well his organization might have treated her. Not about something like this. And yet, she was coming up on Foreshed, still undecided, when she heard the faint whine of a repulsor lift. She peered up into the sky, shading her eyes with her free hand as she tried to spot the incoming ship. But nothing was visible. And as the whine grew louder, she realized abruptly that it was the sound of one of their own vehicles. She spun around and looked over toward the maintenance hangar, just in time to see one of their two skip-ray blast boats rise above the treetops. For a pair of heartbeats, she stared at the ship, wondering what in the Empire Carda thought he was doing. Sending an escort or pilot ship for the Imperials, perhaps? And then, abruptly, it clicked. She twisted back and sprinted for the foreshed, pulling her blaster from its forearm sheath as she ran. The lock on the room inexplicably refused to open. She tried it twice, and then blasted it. Skywalker was gone. She swore viciously and ran out into the compound. The skip-ray had shifted to forward motion now, disappearing behind the trees to the west. Jamming her blaster back into its sheath, she grabbed the comlink off her belt and swore again. The Imperials could be here at any minute, and any mention of Skywalker's presence would land them all in very deep trouble indeed. Which left her with exactly one option. She reached the second skip-ray at a dead run, and had it in the air within 2 minutes. Skywalker would not get away now. Kicking the drive to full power, she screamed off in pursuit. Chapter 23. They showed up almost simultaneously on the scopes, the other of Carda's fighter ships pursuing him from behind, and the Imperial Star Destroyer in orbit far overhead. "I think," Luke called back to R2, "that we're in trouble." The droid's reply was almost swallowed up in the roar as Luke gingerly eased the drive up as high as he dared. The strange fighter's handling wasn't even remotely like anything he'd ever flown before, slightly reminiscent of the snowspeeders the Alliance had used on Hoth, but with the kind of sluggish response time that implied a great deal of armor and engine mass. With time, he was pretty sure he'd be able to master it. But time was something he was rapidly running out of. He risked a glance at the aft vision display. The other fighter was coming up fast, with no more than a minute or two now separating the two ships. Obviously, the pilot had far more experience with the craft than Luke had. That, or else such a fierce determination to recapture Luke that it completely overrode normal common sense caution. Either way, it meant Mara Jade. The fighter dipped a little too deep, scraping its ventral tail fin against the tops of the trees and drawing a sharp squeal of protest from R2. "Sorry," Luke called back, feeling a fresh surge of perspiration break out on his forehead as he again carefully eased the drive up a notch. Speaking of overriding common sense, but at the moment, sticking to the treetops was about the only option he had. The forest below, for some unknown reason, seemed to have a scattering or scrambling effect on sensor scans, both detection and navigational. Staying low forced his pursuer to stay low, too, lest she lose visual contact with him against the mottled forest backdrop, and also at least partially hid him from the orbiting Star Destroyer. The Star Destroyer. Luke glanced at the image on his overhead scope, feeling his stomach tighten. At least he knew now who the company was Mara had mentioned. It looked like he'd gotten out just in the nick of time. On the other hand, perhaps the move to that storage shed implied that Carda had decided not to sell him to the Imperials after all. It might be worth asking Carda about someday, preferably from a great distance. Behind him, R2 suddenly trilled a warning. Luke jerked in his seat, eyes flickering across the scopes as he searched for the source of the trouble. And jerked again. There, directly above his dorsal tail fin, and less than a ship's length away, was the other fighter. "Hang on," Luke shouted at R2, clenching his teeth tightly together. His one chance now was to pull a dropkick Koiogran turn, killing his forward momentum and loop rolling into another direction. Twisting the control stick with one hand, he jammed the throttle forward with the other. And abruptly, the cockpit canopy exploded into a slapping tangle of tree branches, and he was thrown hard against his restraints as the fighter spun and twisted and rolled out of control. The last thing he heard before the darkness took him was R2's shrill electronic scream. The three shuttles came to a perfectly synchronized landing, as overhead the TIE fighter escort shot by in equally perfect formation. "The Empire's parade ground expertise hasn't eroded anyway," Avis murmured. "Quiet," Carda murmured back, watching the shuttle ramps lower to the ground. The center one, almost certainly, would be Thrawn's. Marching with blaster rifles held ceremoniously across their chests, a line of stormtroopers filed down each of the three ramps. Behind them, emerging not from the center, but from the rightmost of the shuttles, came a handful of mid-ranking officers. Following them came a short, wiry being of unknown race, with dark gray skin, bulging eyes, a protruding jaw, and the look of a bodyguard. Following him came Grand Admiral Thrawn. So much, Carda thought, for him doing things the obvious way. It would be something to make a note of for future reference. With his small reception committee beside him, he walked toward the approaching group of Imperials, trying to ignore the stares of the stormtroopers. "Grand Admiral Thrawn," he nodded in greeting. "Welcome to our little corner of Mirker. I'm Talon Carda." "Pleased to meet you, Captain," Thrawn said, inclining his head slightly. Those glowing eyes, Carda decided, were even more impressive in person than they were on a comm display, and considerably more intimidating. "I apologize for our somewhat less than formal greeting," Carda continued, waving a hand at his group. "We don't often entertain people of your status here." Thrawn cocked a blue-black eyebrow. "Really? I'd have thought a man in your position would be used to dealing with the elite, particularly high planetary officials whose cooperation, shall we say, you find you require." Carda smiled easily. "We deal with the elite from time to time, but not here. This is, was, I should say," he added, glancing significantly at the stormtroopers, "our private operations base." "Of course," Thrawn said. "Interesting drama a few minutes ago out there to the west. Tell me about it." With an effort, Carda hid a grimace. He'd hoped the sensor-scrambling effect of Mirker's trees would have hidden the skip-ray chase from Thrawn's view. Obviously, it hadn't. "Merely a small internal problem," he assured the Grand Admiral. "A former and somewhat disgruntled employee broke into one of our storage sheds, stole some merchandise, and made off with one of our ships. Another of our people is in pursuit." "Was in pursuit, Captain," Thrawn corrected lazily, those eyes seeming to burn into Carda's face. "Or didn't you know they both went down?" Carda stared at him, a thin needle of ice running through him. "I didn't know that, no," he said. "Our sensors,
The metallic content of the trees fouls them up badly.
We had a higher observation angle, Thrawn said. It looked as if the first ship hit the trees, with the pursuer getting caught in the slipstream.
He regarded Carda thoughtfully.
I take it the pursuer was someone special.
Carda let his face harden a bit.
All my associates are special, he said, pulling out his comlink. Please excuse me a moment. I have to get a rescue team organized.
Thrawn took a long step forward, reaching two pale blue fingers to cover the top of the comlink.
Permit me, he said smoothly. Troop commander?
One of the stormtroopers stepped forward.
Sir?
Take a detail out to the crash site, Thrawn ordered, his eyes still on Carda. Examine the wreckage and bring back any survivors. And anything that looks like it wouldn't normally belong in a skip-ray blast boat.
Yes, sir,
the other gestured. And one of the columns of stormtroopers turned and retraced their steps up the ramp of the leftmost shuttle.
I appreciate your assistance, Admiral, Carda said, his mouth suddenly a little dry. But it really isn't necessary. On the contrary, Captain, Thrawn said softly. Your assistance with the Asala Miri has left us in your debt. How better for us to repay you?
How better indeed, Carda murmured. The ramp lifted into place, and with the hum of repulsor lifts, the shuttle rose into the air. The cards were dealt, and there was nothing he could do now to alter them. He could only hope that Mara somehow had things under control. With anyone else, he wouldn't have bet on it. With Mara, there was a chance.
And now, Thrawn said, I believe you were going to show me around.
Yes, Carda nodded. If you'll come this way, please. Looks like the stormtroopers are leaving, Han said quietly, pressing the macro binoculars a little harder against his forehead. Some of them, anyway. Filing back into one of the shuttles.
Let me see, Lando muttered from the other side of the tree.
Keeping his movements slow and careful, Han handed the macro binoculars over. There was no telling what kind of equipment they had on those shuttles and TIE fighters, and he didn't especially trust all this talk about how good the trees were at sensor shielding.
Yes, it seems to be just the one shuttle that's going, Lando agreed.
Han half turned, the serrated grass-like plants they were lying on top of digging into his shirt with the movement.
You get Imperial visitors here often? He demanded.
Not here. Gent shook his head nervously, his teeth almost chattering with tension.
They've been to the forest once or twice to pick up some Isali Miri, but they've never come to the base, at least not while I was here.
Isala Miri, Lando frowned. What are those?
Little furry snakes with legs, Gent said. I don't know what they're good for. Look, couldn't we get back to the ship now? Carda told me I was supposed to keep you there, where you'd be safe.
Han ignored him.
What do you think? He asked Lando.
The other shrugged.
Got to have something to do with that skip ray that went burning out of here just as Carda was herding us out.
There was some kind of prisoner, Gent offered. Carda and Jade had him stashed away. Maybe he got out. Now, can we please get back to...
A prisoner? Lando repeated, frowning back at the kid. When did Carda start dealing with prisoners?
Maybe when he started dealing with kidnappers, Han growled before Gent could answer.
We don't deal with kidnappers, Gent protested.
Well, you're dealing with one now, Han told him, nodding toward the group of Imperials.
That little gray guy in there?
That's one of the aliens who tried to kidnap Leia and me.
What? Lando peered through the macro binoculars again,
Are you sure?
It's one of the species, anyway. We didn't stop at the time to get names.
Han looked back at Ghent.
This prisoner, who was he?
I don't know, Ghent shook his head. They brought him back on the wild Karda a few days ago and put him in the short-term barracks. I think they'd just moved him over to one of the storage sheds when we got the word that the Imperials were coming down for a visit.
What did he look like?
I don't know, Ghent hissed,
what little was left of his composure going fast. Skulking around forests and spying on armed stormtroopers was clearly not the sort of thing an expert slicer was supposed to have to put up with.
None of us was supposed to go near him or ask any questions about him.
Lando caught Han's eye.
Could be someone they don't want the Imperials to get hold of. A defector, maybe, trying to get to the New Republic.
Han felt his lip twist. I'm more worried right now about them having moved him out of the barracks. That could mean the stormtroopers are planning to move in for a while.
Karda didn't say anything about that, Ghent objected.
Karda may not know it yet, Lando said dryly. Trust me, I was on the short end of a stormtrooper bargain once.
He handed the macrobinoculars back to Han. Looks like they're going inside.
They were indeed. Han watched as the procession set off. Karda and the blue-skinned Imperial officer in front, their respective entourages following, the twin columns of stormtroopers flanking the whole parade.
Any idea who that guy with the red eyes is?
He asked Ghent.
I think he's a Grand Admiral or something, the other said. Took over Imperial operations a while back. I don't know his name.
Han looked at Lando, found the other sending the same look right back at him.
A Grand Admiral?
Lando repeated carefully.
Yeah. Look, they're going. There's nothing else to see. Can we please...
Let's get back to the Falcon, Han muttered, stowing the macrobinoculars in their belt pouch and starting a backwards elbows and knees crawl from their covering tree.
A Grand Admiral. No wonder the New Republic had been getting the sky cut out from under them lately.
I don't suppose you have any records on Imperial Grand Admirals back on the Falcon, Lando murmured, backing up alongside him.
No, Han told him, but they've got him on Coruscant.
Great, Lando said, the words almost lost in the hissing of the sharp-bladed grass as they elbowed their way through it. Let's hope we live long enough to get this tidbit back there.
We will, Han assured him grimly.
We'll stick around long enough to find out what kind of game Karda's playing, but then we're gone. Even if we have to blow out of here with that camo net still hanging off the ship.
The strangest thing about waking up this time, Luke decided dimly, was that he didn't actually hurt anywhere. And he should have. From what he remembered of those last few seconds, and from the view of splintered trees outside the fighter's twisted canopy, he would have counted himself lucky even to be alive, let alone undamaged. Clearly, the restraints and crash balloons had been augmented by something more sophisticated. An emergency acceleration compensator, perhaps. A shaky sort of gurgle came from behind him.
You okay, R2? He called, levering himself out of his seat and climbing awkwardly across the canted floor.
Hang on, I'm coming.
The droid's information retrieval jack had been snapped off in the crash, but apart from that and a couple of minor dents, he didn't seem to have been damaged.
We'd better get moving, Luke told him, untangling him from his restraints. That other ship could be back with a ground party any time.
With an effort, he got R2 aft. The hatchway door popped open without serious complaint. Hopping down, he looked around. The second fighter would not be returning with any ground parties. It was right here.
in worse shape, if possible, than Luke's.
From the hatchway, R2 whistled in squeamish-sounding awe.
Luke glanced up at him, looked back at the ruined craft.
Given the fighter's safety equipment, it was unlikely that Mara was seriously injured.
A backup flight was inevitable. She would probably be able to hold out until then.
But then again, she might not.
"Wait here, R2, he told the droid. "I'm going to take a quick look."
Even though the exterior of the fighter was in worse shape than Luke's, the interior actually seemed to be a little better off. Crunching his way across the bits of debris in the weapons tech area, he stepped into the cockpit doorway. Only the top of the pilot's head showed over the seat back, but that shimmering red-gold hair was all he needed to see to know that his earlier guess had been correct. It was indeed Mara Jade who'd been chasing him. For a pair of heartbeats, he stayed where he was, torn between the need for haste and the need to satisfy his internal sense of ethics. He and R2 had to get out of here with all possible speed. That much was obvious. But if he turned his back on Mara now, without even pausing to check her condition. His mind flashed back to Coruscant, to the night Ben Kenobi had said his final farewells. "In other words," he told 3PO later up on the roof, "a Jedi can't get so caught up in matters of galactic importance that it interferes with his concern for individual people." And it would, after all, only take a minute. Stepping into the room, he looked around the seat back. Directly into a pair of wide-open, perfectly conscious green eyes. Green eyes that stared at him over the barrel of a tiny blaster.
"I figured you'd come," she said, her voice grimly satisfied. "Back up, now."
He did as ordered. "Are you hurt at all?" he asked.
"None of your business," she retorted.
She climbed out of the seat, pulling a small flat case from under the chair with her free hand as she stood up. Another glitter caught his eye. She was again wearing his lightsaber on her belt.
"There's a case in that compartment just over the exit hatch," she told him. "Get it."
He found the release and got the compartment open. Inside was an unfamiliarly labeled metal case with the very familiar look of a survival kit to it. "I hope we're not going to have to walk the whole way back," he commented, pulling the bag out and dropping out the hatchway.
"I won't," she countered.
She seemed to hesitate just a little before following him down to the ground.
"Whether you make the trip back at all is another question."
He locked gazes with her. "Finishing what you started with this?" he asked, nodding at his wrecked ship. She snorted.
"Listen, buddy boy, it was you who took us down, not me. My only mistake was being stupid enough to be sitting too close to your tail when you hit the trees. Put the bag down and get that droid out of there."
Luke did as he was told.
By the time R2 was down beside him, she had the survival kit's lid open and was fiddling one-handed with something inside.
"Just stay right there," she told him, "and keep your hands where I can see them."
She paused, cocking her head slightly to the side as if listening. A moment later, in the distance, Luke could hear the faint sound of an approaching ship.
"Sounds like our ride back is already on the way," Mara said. "I want you and the droid."
She stopped in mid-sentence, her eyes going strangely unfocused, her throat tight with concentration. Luke frowned, eyes and ears searching for the problem. Abruptly, she slammed the survival kit lid shut and scooped it up.
"Move,"
she snapped, gesturing away from the wrecked fighters. With her blaster hand, she picked up the flat box she'd been carrying and wedged it under her left arm.
"Into the trees,
Both of you. I said, move.
There was something in her voice, command or urgency, or both, that stifled argument, or even question. Within a handful of seconds, Luke and R2 were under cover of the nearest trees.
Farther in, she ordered. Come on, move it.
Belatedly, it occurred to Luke that this might all be some macabre joke, that all Mara really wanted was to shoot him in the back and be able to claim afterward that he'd been running away. But she was right behind him, close enough that he could hear her breathing and occasionally feel the tip of her blaster as it brushed his back. They made it perhaps 10 meters farther in. Luke leaned down to help R2 across a particularly wide route.
Far enough, Mara hissed in his ear.
Hide the droid and then hit dirt.
Luke got R2 over the root and behind a tree, and as he dropped down beside Mara, he suddenly understood. Hanging in midair over the wrecked fighters, rotating slowly like a hovering raptor searching for prey, was an Imperial shuttle. A small motion caught the corner of his eye, and he turned his head to look directly into the muzzle of Mara's blaster.
Not a move, she whispered,
her breath warm on his cheek.
Not a sound.
He nodded understanding and turned back to watch the shuttle. Mara slid her arm over his shoulders, pressed her blaster into the hinge of his jaw, and did the same. The shuttle finished its circle and settled gingerly to the torn-up ground between the ruined fighters. Even before it was completely down, the ramp dropped and began disgorging stormtroopers. Luke watched as they split up and headed off to search the two ships, the strangeness of the whole situation adding an unreal tinge to the scene. There, less than 20 meters away, was Mara's golden opportunity to turn him over to the Imperials. And yet, here they both lay, hiding behind a tree root and trying not to breathe too loudly. Had she suddenly changed her mind? Or was it simply that she didn't want any witnesses nearby when she killed him? In which case, Luke realized abruptly, his best chance might actually be to find some way of surrendering to the stormtroopers. Once away from this planet, with the Force as his ally again, he would at least have a fighting chance. If he could just find a way to distract Mara long enough to get rid of her blaster. Lying pressed against his side, her arms slung across his shoulders, she must have sensed the sudden tensing of muscles.
Whatever you're thinking about trying, don't, she breathed in his ear, digging her blaster a little harder into his skin. I can easily claim you were holding me prisoner out here, and that I managed to snatch the blaster away from you.
Luke swallowed and settled in to wait. The wait wasn't very long. Two groups of stormtroopers disappeared into the fighters, while the rest walked around the edge of the newly created clearing, probing with eyes and portable sensors into the forest. This book is continued at this point on the other side of this cassette. Please reverse or turn the cassette over now.